Anyway, they closed the office and they let me go. I was sort of a little bit lost. I'm looking around for something, and about 5 years, almost 6 years since Arthur and I divorced, and I was living in the city, and I really didn't know anybody, and I'm not too good at meeting people. It's not very easy, so especially when you got two little girls, and a lot of guys don't want to know about that, so. And then when I lost my job, I was a little panicky too, because I didn't have a cent saved, nothing. And of course I got nothing from Arthur. And I saw this ad, and it said, Rent a Family is looking for women with children, and they wanted you to be rented out for to be a family to somebody. I couldn't believe this thing actually was real, that somebody was, really trying to hire mothers with little kids. Anyway, I called him up. There was this woman that I talked to, and she said I should come down. She gave me an appointment. And I went down, and they had a very nice office. They had all this staff, and all these people seemed really nice. And then they asked me a lot of questions about my background, and they wanted to know all about my family, and where I was from originally, and my religion and everything. And there was this long questionnaire all about how my life and what I had done for a living, and what my husband had done, and where we'd lived, and my things I liked to do, and my tastes, and the children, and what they liked, and all. It went on and on. I mean, it was about a 10-page application. I never filled out anything so complicated and really thorough, and when I got through filling out this form, they thanked me, and they said they'd let me know. And then when I got home, I started to think about it, and I thought, oh my, what am I doing? I mean, this is crazy that I could even imagine doing such a thing. I mean, renting myself and my children to some bachelor for to give him a family, a temporary family. It just, the whole thing seemed absolutely insane, and I was sort of sorry I'd filled it all out. I was really embarrassed that I'd told him my whole life story, and that I'd even gotten into this thing at all. And I just decided to put it out of my mind and keep looking for a job. But what happened was, in the next morning, this lady, the one who had interviewed me, called me up, and she said that they were interested in having me come down and sign up for their program. She was very nice. I mean, this woman was very, really nice. It was the kind of person that you trust her, and she was nice, she was sincere, she was absolutely, I mean, she was so upfront, and she was not at all like anybody that you could ever associate with any kind of anything sordid or underhanded not really above board and legitimate. And so I after I talked to her, I reconsidered. I thought about it a lot, and well, there were two reasons, and I think of course the money, which I desperately needed, and also the fact that I was lonely and not meeting anybody. And I thought, who knows, if they screen the applicants as carefully as they screened me, and they really went into my background so thoroughly, then what? There couldn't be any risk at all. That's the way I felt. So I decided to go down there, and once I had signed, she explained to me that they would have to videotape me and the children, and so that they could show it to their prospective clients, and they could, on the basis of this tape, would be able to decide whether they wanted to rent me, to rent us, or not. And she also explained to me that I would be able to see tapes of these applicants, and so that if one of them picked us, and if I didn't like him, find him congenial, you know, then I would have the option of not accepting. That seemed very fair to me. And she also told me that they screened these applicants very, very carefully, and that it was, it was very reassuring. But what I wanted to know also was, exactly what was going to be expected of me. I mean, if I was rented, say, to spend a day with this person, I mean, I wanted to know whether I was going to be expected to cook for him or clean his house. I mean, I didn't know. I thought maybe he doesn't just want company. Maybe he wants a wife, like most men want a wife. They want a wife to do things for them. And so I asked about that, and she said, no. I mean, you can do things like that if you want to. And but you, if he asks you to and you don't feel like cooking and you don't, I mean, he can't ask you to do things like that. You can volunteer. I mean, she explained that whatever we do together, I mean, whether it's going to a movie or watching a ball game or whatever, or you know, going to a restaurant or having a snack at home, is up to us to decide mutually, and that I would never have to accept to do anything, even if it was to go see a movie I didn't like. So after I signed up, I then I made an appointment for the videotaping, then to come back with and to bring the kids. And after school the next day, we did that.
Are looking for different things. That's why they have the opportunity to view the videotapes we make of the various families, and of course the families get to see the videotapes of our applicants. As I mentioned to you before, we'll often suggest to a young gentleman or middle-aged gentleman that he experience a wide range of kinds of families. Now, we have people who use our service on an ongoing basis, and of course they're in a position, depending on the mood they're in, depending on what's going on in their lives, to take advantage of a particular kind of family that they know we have in our inventory. We have certain package programs where an individual can experience over the course of a 12-month period a sort of a sampler. And an individual has the opportunity to experience a pretty considerable range of families. Often this will inform that individual of the kind of family he wants to participate with on a longer-term basis. I don't mean that family longer term, but as he uses our service from month to month or year to year, he may choose to go back to a kind of family, or he might find that the sample appeals to him and then he can alternate his families.
Let us say that the goal of Rent-A-Family is to provide the paying customer with a family that best suits his needs. What if a situation arises where the present Rent-A-Family that he is experiencing is very good, except in one particular? There is one too few children in the family. There are two at present. They need a third. Can you provide this kind of service?
Not at the moment, no, not as yet. That would be an impossible service for us to provide because we can't be bringing in an unattached child into a family. That would not qualify under our program. And he'd have to, a person like that would have to go to a different family who would meet his requirements more fully.
Find that a rented family has a limited vibrancy, a limited usefulness as they wear out, as they are passed from situation to situation.
Well, some find it's not their cup of tea, and after one or two outings, withdraw from the program. Others increase their availability in the program.
Are larger families more expensive? Are certain ethnic families more expensive? Are more beautiful women with older daughters more expensive? Are sexually promiscuous young boys that live within a family with an ugly woman less expensive?
It's much like any other business arrangement. It comes down to supply and demand. We place a premium and thereby charge a higher price for certain families which are more difficult to obtain, in which we have a much smaller representation in our pool. I think that Rent-A-Family is, again, a response, and perhaps a prophetic response, to a societal situation. The institutions that require long-term commitments, I think, perhaps, are being exposed. They're being exposed and shown for what they are, and perhaps they are expedients.
We cannot deny that the society is seems to be speeding up before our very eyes. People grow up faster, they learn faster. There's no long-term anything. One looks at business, politics, entertainment. People are elected and then they're ousted. Stars come into prominence and then they're forgotten in no time. And this seems to be an outcome of the increased technology that no one knows how to stop. And it's hard for me to see a way in which society won't be profoundly influenced by this.
Well, society was profoundly influenced several years ago by the advent of something that we all seem to take for granted at the time, which is built-in obsolescence. When that concept came up, and I think it had something to do with the manufacture of automobiles, people were, they did not feel very good about the idea of built-in obsolescence because they thought that ethically, manufacturers should plan for an object to last as long as it possibly can within the concept of our technological development. And in fact, the whole success of Rent-A-Family is based on the idea of built-in obsolescence, because in relationships, within the concept of that program, they are over almost as soon as they begin.
Let me posit a query here for all of us. Is a, quote, long-term relationship better, per se, than a short-term relationship? Is a growing sense of commitment to a person or a family or an idea morally, ethically, societally more valuable than a series of short-term commitments.
The whole idea of renting things has to do with people's desire to not have a permanent commitment to them. To rent a car is a desire to not own that car. By renting a car, you can experience it, the joy of it, for a weekend or a month, and then give it back, and then go on and rent another one. If you want to rent a garden tool, you might say, well, why don't you just own that garden tool? But the feeling is, well, I may not need it. So we're responding to a real need in this society, and I feel that...
Except this is not between a person and a thing. This is, in fact, an interaction between a person and another person.
And the result is that people become further and further removed from the act of really experiencing what long-term commitment would provide. Yes. And this is the danger.
People who bring to a relationship very little history are free to exist happily in that moment. You may find that in standard families, in families which have a long history and a future, an isolated moment is sometimes as miserable as it can be because of the weight of that past and future. Whereas we find in our brief encounters a great amount of joy and freshness. This absence of commitment often allows people to be more spontaneous with each other and to enjoy each other, and perhaps there's the irony.
Come on, the absence of commitment merely allows people to enjoy and make use of their more animal instincts. Many of the women consider these to be weekends in which they sell themselves for prostitution, basically, and many of the men who have signed up several times have said that one of the great pleasures is that in fact they can get a large variety of women and children at times, and presumably they can take out on these basically innocent people their own warped vision of a life that has so far cheated them in this particular area.
Hi, my name is Carmen. I am 38 years old. I love movies, I love music, I love fun in life, and there sure isn't enough of it, so let's try to make the best out of it.
My name is Carmen, I'm 10 years old, so I represent Drew Pinkfold, and I love to collect stamps.
I'm 7 years old, and
my name is Stuffed
Animals.
Zoning regulations.
Who is very kind, who will share centers. Things with me, who is supportive, and who enjoys my company.
I like to play inside.
I don't feel so comfortable.
It is very important in life to me to be honest, to be down to earth.
Diane is very, she's a little one. She loves to act up and play act and talk to everybody and everything. But Wendy's very shy, and I you know, I knew I'd have a little trouble getting her to sit in front of a camera and act natural, but, well, this lady was really very good with them, and that's the, they had a man doing the camera, and he was very funny. He had a nice sense of humor, and he got Wendy giggling, and with her two front teeth out, she's so adorable. Anyway, the tape came out real good, and we went home. The kids were kind of excited because they thought they were going to be on TV. And after I put them to bed that night, I began to think again that it was crazy. And what was I doing? And what was I exposing myself to? And even worse, what was I exposing my children to? I mean, I had no idea. It just all seemed totally crazy. And I didn't sleep much that night, but the next day there was this phone call, and a lady from the agency called, and she said that somebody had seen my tape and wanted to rent us. And I said, well, I don't know. I thought I'd back out. I didn't know what to do. But anyway, she said if I wanted to, I could come down and see a tape of this man, and then I could decide whether I wanted to let him rent us or not. So I thought, okay, I'll go down and I'll look at it, and then I'll see. And so I went down, and I was expecting some awful guy, you know, somebody. Well, because I figured that anybody had to rent a family, there must be something terribly wrong with him. And I expected him to be really unattractive or really strange, or really, I mean, not somebody that I would want to let my kids be around at all. And I thought he would be somebody really, you know, strange, or somebody, I don't know, abnormal. There had to be something wrong with him. But, I was really surprised because first I read his written application that the one I had filled out. He read like a very interesting person and a very sane, nice person, and very, you know, really nice background. And I was amazed because, I mean, this man was so well educated, and he'd been to one of the best universities in the country, and he had a master's degree, and he had been a university instructor, and he was working for this big publishing house. I mean, this man was so exceptional and intellectually, and in fact, I wondered why he picked me, because I haven't got that much formal education. But anyway, I was very impressed with everything I read about him. And then I started thinking, well, the guy must be very intellectual and very intelligent and smart and everything, but and maybe, you know, he may be very nice, but he's probably some horrible monster physically, because, I mean, I was just assuming that there had to be something wrong with him, something wrong, really. Anyway, it was time to see the video, and I was absolutely amazed, because he was just a nice, really nice looking man, sort of medium height, and I guess in his 40s, and he had dark hair. He wasn't too short and wasn't too long, and it a little gray, and it just, he was very nicely dressed, and very sort of the way I like men to dress, and conservative, but not, you know, not bankerish, sort of sporty a little bit. He was wearing a shirt with a sweater over it and a very nice sports jacket, one of these tweed jackets, and he had really nice eyes. I mean, nice, sort of warm, and very sensitive face, and very intelligent face, and he looked like the kind of person that I would want to meet, you know. And he had a nice voice too. He was very reassuring. So I really felt like I could get along easily with this man. He said that he'd been working very hard all his life, and he'd been very totally dedicated to studying first, and then career and his job. And he said that with all the things that he'd been doing, that he just hadn't somehow taken the time to create a relationship for himself, and that now that he's in his 40s, he feels it as a great lack in his life, and that this agency was giving him the opportunity to experience something of what he had been missing in his life, and that ultimately he really wanted a home, and he really wanted a relationship, and he really wanted children, and this was his chance to explore what really having a real family would be like. And he talked about the terrible loneliness and that he felt, and I really could relate to that. You know, he talked about how on vacations or weekends or, well, you know, especially like Christmas times like that, it was very hard for him, and so this renting family thing was a great opportunity for him to really experience what it would be like to have his own family. And I really got the feeling from listening to him and from watching him that he wasn't so much just trying to experience having a family on this temporary sort of rental kind of a basis, but that he was really looking to maybe find an already existing family to make his own. So I told the lady I accepted. I was very excited about meeting him. I mean, he was the kind of man that I would have gone out with without being paid. So that night I took the kids and sat them at the kitchen table, and I told them that I had a new friend, and that he was going to be their friend too, and that we were going to spend some time with him. And they seemed very pleased. So the next day he called, and we must have talked for a half hour on the phone. He really sounded nice, and it was so easy. It was so comfortable talking to him. Anyway, we made a date for the next Sunday. We decided to go on a picnic and to the beach. I told the kids, and they were very excited and started nagging about, you know, what to wear and what we're going to take, and all the things they wanted to play, the games they wanted to take, and all that. And they asked me a lot of questions about him. They really were curious, and I answered as best I could. I felt that I knew a lot about him already based on the questionnaire and the tape and this long conversation that we had on the phone. I really felt that I could tell them about him, and they asked me what they should call him, and I said just call him by his first name, and I had my nails done. I had some highlights put in my hair, and I had a nice cut, you know, I sort of, kind of, you know, like they're doing now, brushed up, and I even had my feet done, because we were going to the beach, and I bought cute little things for the kids to wear. I had told him that I would make some things for the picnic, so I made a bunch of sandwiches and got some nice fruit, and I baked some cupcakes, and I got some wonderful cheeses, and he said he would bring some wine and soft drinks for the girls. So I just made this big camper full of food.
I think it's important to recognize the depth of loneliness that must be addressed here. I do believe that we can all agree that there is an enormous number of profoundly lonely, desperate people out there, men, women of all ages. They are confronted steadily by the media and by literature and by music with the concept of a happy family, all the situation comedies that are on the air right now, all the wonderful advertisements and publicity that you see that encourages the belief in the joyous, happy family, integrated, and of course this is the opposite seems to be more and more the truth that we were talking about. The large tribes where uncles, aunts, in-laws, cousins all live together, brought down now to the two-parent family, and now we're talking about the single-parent family, and we seem to see in the future the possibility of the no-parent family, that is, children living without parents.
Let me ask, do you rent the children without a parent?
No. In fact, I think it would be important to clarify a bit the kind of services we provide. Of course, we only provide families with a parent. These are single-parent families which are in our pool of participants.
You have, in fact, a role-playing which presupposes the existence of an actor underneath it, and the essence of an actor is his emptiness, the ability that he may have to bring into himself the substance of the character that he is portraying, the points that define character, the points that define personality are assumed and do not arise naturally out of the actor himself. And when stripped of these outer characteristics, we find men, specifically men, because the bulk of the renters are men in this program, are without a character, or without conviction, without a sense of themselves as individuals in specific terms.
May I interrupt, Dr. Blandar, because this very lack of self-perception is part of the problem that we at Rent-A-Family address ourselves to. I carefully screen, and all of my people do screen and counsel with an individual who's going to avail himself of our service. Often, an individual coming to us will request a multi-phased program in which they might, on various occasions, visit and stay with a wide range of different types of families. In order to get a better sense of the kind of family situation that they might ultimately flourish best in. And this gives them the opportunity to operate and to perhaps cause to evolve.
But in fact, the theory, I think, does not hold water, because what happens is that regardless of the nature of the assumed characteristics, the anchor is defined as commitment. And until you can have the commitment, you cannot assume that these character traits are real and are applicable to the person under scrutiny.
What Joel Barrington has just said about his screening process and his whole idea of the multiple choice system is really just utopian codswallop. Most people are filmed on a videotape machine for about 4 minutes, and it is that very short piece of videotape that is shown to the prospective family, and they also get a view of the prospective family in a very similar, very cheaply done format that tells you very little except physical size and physical attributes.
And yet this is the way in which society and family relationships are measured in all different manners throughout the country. In other words, this has become a society in which commitment, love, feeling, caring, personality is described in a 30-second television commercial.
The amount of intimacy that exists in these brief encounters, let's face it, is not so much less than what exists in long-term relationships in this society. I hate to be cynical about it, but I think it's true. Our program rose up in response to that situation. People barely know each other in long-term relationships.
There's no doubt that what Mr. Barrington has set into place is consistent with the development of our psychological, philosophical development as a culture.
Rent-A-Family, in fact, is merely a notion of selling an odd piece of nostalgia for a quick weekend.
We're talking about a current society, which is a franchised society, a fast food society, a fast feeling society, a society based on short relationships, serial relationships, in which in business one moves from one job to another, in relationships one moves from one partner to another, and it does not seem to be getting more substantive, but less substantive. We're talking about children who, if they are raised to believe that it is a decent, good, healthy world out there where you have a chance to establish a relationship with someone or something and continue it, it is certainly true that they will be sorely disappointed, frustrated, and alienated when that society turns out to be quite the contrary to what they've been raised to believe it is going to be. The question is, if society is unhealthy, should the children be raised unhealthily?
That's a very good question, and indeed it raises the point of whether or not the Rent-A-Family program perpetuates some of the worst aspects of the society. As a matter of fact, it institutionalizes some of what, prior to the development of Rent-A-Family, we knew as the way things were. This is the way things are. The only thing that Mr. Barrington did was put a price tag on it.
It could turn out to be really a very good thing culturally, as long as it's handled with tact and care. And we might even find that many lonely bachelors who have not adjusted to familial relationships might actually be learning through this process how to commit themselves on a more permanent and lasting basis.
But since we've reached this point in the discussion, I think it's only wise to bring up the case of Lucas Bemke, who was the only suicide so far in the program, and to indicate his situation as being a very extreme example of what can possibly happen in a situation where which can be described as no-win. As you remember, Mr. Bemke was involved with one family and continued to pay on a daily and then a weekly basis because at first, his situation was such that he felt that this was a family in which he would like to remain. only later did he find out that he was experiencing a sense of shame to leave the situation, and he did not have the emotional wherewithal to break free. So without what we might consider as a normal or a socially acceptable relationship, he was actually paying your organization, Rent a Family, on a weekly basis in order to stay with a family that he would just have preferred to leave. So he did not have the satisfaction, and he was also breaking himself financially at the same time as he was breaking himself psychologically and emotionally. And eventually it led to his downfall yes. and ultimate suicide.
This is
and
true.
It is, although it is the only case, it is symptomatic of some of the potholes into which people in the system could fall, given a wide range of possibilities.
So Sunday morning, he came. He was right on time at 10 o'clock. And he drove up in this very nice-looking station wagon and looked really new, which I later found out was rented. And he looked very, very nice. He looked just like he did on his tape, only he was dressed in white jeans and he had this wonderful shirt, sports shirt open and he was nicely built. I mean, he had a nice chest and he had nice strong arms and the three of us, it was funny because we were standing at the window and we were watching him come up the path and I don't know who was most excited. Wendy was jumping up and down. I had to try to calm her down. And Diane was, I guess Diane. Well, she has her own way. And then the kids wanted to go answer the door, and I said, no, I'll answer it. And he rang the doorbell, and I went to the door, and he introduced himself. And I introduced myself, and then the girls were just, you know, sort of pushing past, and I introduced them, and then he started taking out gifts for the girls, and they were really lovely, lovely toys, and I could tell they liked him right away. And then we put all the food and stuff and toys in this station wagon, and we all got in, and kids got in the back and started playing with their toys, and all the way there we had a wonderful time because he was joking with the girls, and he had a really nice sense of humor, and he was making them laugh all the time, and And then we sang songs. We sang all these songs that we used to sing when we were little, and the kids still sing, and like Old MacDonald and Row, Row, Row Your Boat, and we sing 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall. 99 Bottles of Beer. And before we knew it, we were at the beach. And we all piled out and took the picnic stuff down. And it was wonderful because it was a really beautiful beach, and there weren't too many people. And it was late in the summer, and it wasn't real hot. And but it was a beautiful sunny day. The water was a little too cold for me, but he took the kids, and they went and splashed around like wild things and had a wonderful time. And he would carry them on his shoulders, and they'd be splashing each other and playing ball and all just generally playing, having a wonderful time. And then they built this big sand castle and with walls all around it and turrets, and he found things to put on it, like bits of tinfoil for flags and pieces of seaweed and old shells and beautiful things. It was very, very creative and very beautiful, and the kids just had a wonderful time. And then we spread out all the food, and he had the cooler, and he had some really fabulous white wine in it, and he and I had a little sip of wine, and then there were soft drinks for the girls, and we ate all the food. And then he said there was this wonderful ice cream stand down the boardwalk away, and asked us if we wanted some. And of course the kids were very excited, and he started saying, "Ice cream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream." And he said, "Well, come on, we'll go up and we'll get some." And he asked me if I wanted them to bring me back some ice cream, and I said no. And he said, "Okay, well, we'll be right back." And then the girls each took one of his hands, and they weren't shy with him at all. And I watched them walking up toward the boardwalk with him, and it was really nice to see them holding his hands and walking that way. You could see that they really needed that, that they really needed to have a man. They responded to him so totally that it was really beautiful to watch. And then I just turned back and I lay down and closed my eyes and took in some sun. The sun was really warm, and there was a cool breeze. It wasn't too hot. It was just perfect. And I was lying there with my eyes closed, and I was thinking, boy, this could be a whole new life. Oh, it just seemed like my life was going to change. Then a little time passed, and I just sort of turned over and looked up the beach toward the boardwalk to see if they were coming back. And I couldn't see them. So I got up and I looked toward the ice cream place, and I could see the ice cream place, but I couldn't see anybody standing in front of it. So I looked up and down the beach, and the beach was just almost deserted. I didn't really think anything had happened, but I got this funny, scared feeling. So I put on my shoes, and I left everything else there, and I just ran up to the boardwalk. And I went to the ice cream place. And there was a man there, and I said, have you seen a man and two little girls? And he said they'd gotten some ice cream cones, and I asked him where they'd gone, and he said that he thought they went that way, and he pointed down the boardwalk. And so I ran down the boardwalk, and I ran all the way to where the boardwalk stops, and there's nothing but sand there, and then just dunes. And I was looking on the beach and on the boardwalk, and they weren't there. So by this time, I was really terrified, and I was crying, and I started running back in the other direction, and that's when I thought of the parking lot. So I ran down the other side of the boardwalk to the parking lot. And almost all the cars were gone. And so was the station wagon.
You seem to all know what it must be like for a man to walk into a house and meet a strange woman and three stranger children. But that seems to be a product of conditioning and almost taboos, that shouldn't be done. That can't be a happy, fertile situation. And I'm suggesting to you that we've discovered that very often the very strangeness of this encounter turns out to be very productive, and people discover, much to their surprise, that the very lack of familiarity and traditional setting is stimulating to them.
And yet that very description of a man coming home to a woman and three children who seem like complete strangers to him is, I think, many men who have been married for long periods of time and have watched their children grow up might well claim to have had that very same sense of alienation and foreignness with their own family for many years, and perhaps have never been able to see it clearly or express it. Which is more dangerous? Which is more neurotic? Which is more alienating, to have that sense of foreignness with a family that you have lived with for 5, 10, 15 years, or to have that feeling with a family that you have never met before?
Yes, well, in all fairness, you have cleaned it up a bit. I mean, you have made it seem there's a certain legitimacy and cleanliness involved in the transaction, a certain kind of logging in and logging out and signing books and keeping tracks. But in fact, if you let everything fall out the way it would normally, a little more dirty, a little bit more out of context with any kind of institution, we find men coming and living with women for certain periods of time and their families, perhaps, and moving out again without getting to know them very much. This is the style of life today.
We're giving people, sir, what they want. And neither you or anyone else is going to tell me that in this country it's a bad thing to give people what they want.
Yes, perhaps what you're going to tell me is that if people wanted to be geeks, the thing that you would do is give them chickens to bite their heads off.
Sir, I would give them rats and alligators. It's not up to me, sir, to define what is good for people. We're giving people a chance to experiment, and to know what they're getting into before they get into it.
Yes, well, and in doing so, you have fallen very, very squarely into that very respectable category of smarmy pragmatist who can turn anything to their advantage. But in fact, in doing so, you will have to come into contact with people who are guardians of community ethics and guardians of morality and people whose retroactive effects on the society are going to be felt one way or the other, either by evolution or by revolution.